Stage 3 consists of adding the word accents in the same verse to the firmly established base of the rhythm, combined with the proper pronunciation of the vowels and consonants. This process will be easier to learn if we keep the single musical tone which we used for stages 1 and 2, but using it here as a basic point of departure and return for the word accents. You remember that the sound of the verse at the last stage was Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. Keeping the sound in mind, let's now add the word accents. The aim here is to disturb neither the rhythmic pattern nor the sound of the vowels and consonants, but simply to add the word accents to what we had before. To indicate the accented syllable, we'll use a combination of stress and pitch, two of the elements found in English accentuation. Remember, we will not lengthen a short accented syllable. Here is the line at stage 3. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. For the sake of clarity, I repeat. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. What you have just heard might strike you as a somewhat strange and highly chanted sound, something closer to singing than to recitation. This would be a fairly correct impression. But let me clearly say that this sound is not the end goal. It is an intermediary stage and a learning technique necessary to reach the end goal. You may well be able to accelerate the mastery of stage 3 by memorizing a short passage of dactylic hexameters, such as the first 7 lines of the Aeneid. By memorizing these lines at stage 3 with the correct coordination of accents, rhythm, and pronunciation of vowels and consonants, you will have internalized certain basic poetic patterns. This will allow you to read aloud more easily other lines which you have not seen or heard before. After stage 3 has been sufficiently mastered so that in reading aloud, the word accents, the quantitative rhythm, and the vowels and consonants all mesh successfully without mutual interference, stage 4 should be learnt. This stage has the goal of converting the chanted tones of stage 3 into more spoken or recited tones, which is presumably nearer to the way the poetry was actually read. We keep the same deliberate and regular tempo at stage 4 that we used at stage 3. What is actually involved in moving from stage 3 to stage 4? Let's listen to the same line of the Aeneid, now read at stage 4. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. Again, for the sake of clarity, I'll repeat. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. Once the conversion from chanted to spoken tones has been successful at stage 4, we can advance to the 5th and final stage. Stage 5 aims at achieving an artistic unity of all the diverse elements of sound that we have discussed, so that correct form will be given personal meaning, and so that the poem will speak as poetry. Let me repeat stage 4, and then, without interruption, read the same line at stage 5 for contrast. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. Stage 5, once more. Arma virumque cano troiae qui primus aboris. The transition to stage 5 is both subtle and individual. But perhaps the most essential element of this transition is that of greater flexibility in the rendition of the various phonetic components. You perhaps notice that at stage 5, not only are the chanting tones abandoned, but the various word accents have variable rather than identical amounts of stress and levels of pitch. Going beyond this single line that we used as our example, we will find at this last stage of the reading that the subtle variations of the word accents, of the tempo, the phrasing, the pauses at the end of the line and in the middle of the line, all these will vary in accordance with the sense and the mood of the passage, as well as with the degree of emphasis or expression desired. There will be then a multitude of minute variations that reflect the individual reader's attitude to the words he is rendering. But none of these variations will be so strong as to upset the underlying and accurate flow of vowels and consonants, accents, and rhythm. What we are talking about is essentially advancing from a mechanically correct rendition at stage 4 to an aesthetically gratifying rendition at stage 5. While it is impossible to achieve the latter without the former, it is the aesthetically gratifying rendition that is our true goal. We wish to be able to derive personal pleasure from reading Latin literature aloud and to convey this pleasure to others. One technical point that might well be considered at stage 5 is the handling of elision. Although there is no elision in the first line of the Aeneid, many lines of classical Latin poetry have one or more instances of elision, that is, the elimination of a syllable when a final vowel or final M is followed in the next word by an initial vowel or by initial H. Some scholars hold that in cases of elision, the first of the two vowels at this juncture was simply eliminated. While this may be true when the first of the two vowels is a short vowel, this seems most unlikely when the first vowel is a long vowel, or a diphthong, or in the case of final M. In these latter conditions, many scholars hold, and I believe rightly, that the Roman listener was given some audible indication of the vowel that was being elided. This can be done through the appropriate use of the semi-vowels, y and w, in the form of glides, and through the use of vowel contraction. Thus the words promissi ultorum can be read in elision as promissiultorum. The words iuno aeterno can be read in elision as iunvaeterno. In the case of final M, the audible indication can be given by nasalizing all the vowel elements of the syllable that results from the elision. Thus the words multum ille, as we previously heard, can be read multuille. Similar adjustments can be made in other cases of elision so that the integrity of the rhythm can be maintained without the listener experiencing ambiguity concerning the elided vowel. In my own reading, at stage 5, I attempt to give such indications of elided long vowels, diphthongs, and final M. To facilitate the process at stage 5, the use of a memorized passage can once more be of help. If you have already memorized a passage of dactylic hexameters for stage 3, you can use the same passage here. I would suggest that you recite the memorized passage slowly, with the sense of the meaning of each word clearly in your mind as you speak it, and that you allow this sense of the meaning to give shades of expression to the sequence of sounds. This is, of course, what we do almost automatically in reciting English poetry. What is obviously more difficult here is that we are working in a foreign language, where we do not have the almost instinctive coordination of sense and sound. And so in our reading of Latin poetry, we must make an effort not to allow our personal interpretation of the sense of the words to distort the correct linguistic sound of the words. With patience and practice, I believe that these two elements can be successfully fused. I should say a word here on the reading aloud of classical Latin prose, such as the speech of Cicero. As we know, the Romans listened with great attention and sensitivity to the sound of the speaker's words, as well as to their meaning. Orators, philosophers, and historians, whose works were intended to be listened to rather than to be read silently, all composed their works with an instinctive awareness of the importance of the way their words sounded. Obviously, this affected their choice of combinations of consonants, of vowel sequences, and of rhythmic patterns. In our own reading, we should try to recapture these effects as faithfully as possible. This means that not only should we pronounce the vowels, consonants, and word accents as accurately as we can, but that in reading classical Latin prose, we should also respect the same principles of syllabic quantity as in poetry. That is, we should pronounce long syllables as long and short syllables as short. This, incidentally, was my aim before when I read the passage from Cicero. The rhythmic patterns of prose are not as consistent and as clear to the ear as those of poetry, a fact which makes prose generally more difficult to scan than poetry. But the principles are the same, and we should try to observe them. To return now to our sequence of five stages, you, the listener, might well ask, how long does it take to reach stage five, the final goal? Obviously, no universal answer can be given, since individual aptitudes vary, as well as the amount of time available for practice, a necessary ingredient for all language study. Some students, for example, may be able to move very rapidly from stage one to stage five. Others will require more time. I can only say that in my own experience in working with students at both elementary and advanced levels, good results have generally been achieved by the end of one semester, sometimes excellent results. The process is, of course, unending, even after one has reached stage five. As with any act of performance, whether it be athletic, musical, or poetic, perfection is never attained. One can always improve. Yet, with reasonable investment of time and effort, I think that most students of classical Latin can achieve within a year sufficient skills in pronunciation and reading so that they have the clear sense and satisfaction of hearing a living sound in the language they are studying. In the final portion of this recording, I shall read the first seven lines of the Aeneid at stages 2, 3, 4, and 5. This will be followed by Catullus, poem number 1, as an example of the hendecasyllabic meter, also read at stages 2, 3, 4, and 5. Next, as an example of the elegiac couplet, I'll read Catullus, poem number 101, but at stage 5 only. Finally, I'll read two poems of Horace, also at stage 5. The first poem will be from the Odes, Book 2, number 10, an example of the Sapphic strophe. The second, from the Odes, Book 2, number 14, an example of the Alcaic strophe. The handling of elision that I suggested a short while ago will be applied only to the readings at stage 5. First, the opening seven lines of the Aeneid, read at stage 2, the rhythm plus the words. For the sake of simplicity, all elided syllables will be omitted at stages 2, 3, and 4. Arma verumque cano Troiae qui primus aboris, Italian fato profugus lauiniaque venit, Litora multi letteris iactatus et alto, vi superus aevae memore iunonis obiran, multa quoquet bello passus dum conderet urbe, Inferretque Deus Latio genus unde Latino. Albanique patris at qual taimonia Romae. The same lines at stage 3. The rhythm, plus the words, plus the accents. Arma virumque canno Troiae qui primos aboris. Italian fato profugus Lavinaque venit. Litora multil et terris iactatus et alto. Vi superum saevae memoren iununis obiran. Multa quoque et bello passus tum conderet urbe. Inferret quae Deus Latio genus unde Latino. Albanique patris at qual taimonia Romae. The same lines at stage 4, the use of spoken rather than chanted tones. Arma virumque cannu Troiae qui primus aboris. Italian fato profugus Lavinaque venit. Litora multil et terris iactatus et alto. Vi superum saevae memoren iununis obiran. Multa quoque et bello passus tum conderet urbe. Inferretque Deus Latio genus unde Latino. Albanique patris at qual taimonia Romae. The same lines at stage 5. The use of spoken tones combined with individual interpretation. Arma virumque cano Troiae qui primus saboris. Italian fato profugus Lavinaque venit. Littora multum ille terris iactatus et alto. Vi superum saevae memoren iununis obiran. Multa quoque et bello passus tum conderet urbe. Inferretque Deus Latio genus unde Latino. Albanique patris at qual taimonia Romae. Now Catullus 1, read at stage 2. The rhythm plus the words. This is an example of the hendecasyllabic meter. Again, for the sake of simplicity, all elided syllables will be omitted at stages 2, 3, and 4. Cuido no lepidon ovum libellum. Arida modo pumic expolitum. Corneli tibinam que tu solebas. Meas essa liquid putare nugas. Ian ton caos osses unus italorum. Omnae vont rebus explicare cartis. Doctis Jupiter et laboriosis. Qua rabet ibi quid hoc libelli, quale cumque quod patrona Virgo, plus uno maneat perenne saeclo. The same lines at stage 3. The rhythm, plus the words, plus the accents. Coi dono lepidono o libellon, arida modo pumic expoliton, Corneli tibinamque tu solebas, meas essa liquid putare nugas. Iam ton causus es unus italorum. Omnae vont rebus explicare cartis. Doctis Jupiter et laboriosis. Qua rabet tibi quid hoc libelli, quale cumque quod patrona Virgo, plus uno maneat perenne saeclo. The same lines at stage 4. The use of spoken rather than chanted tones.
Cui dono lepidono o libellon, arida modo pumic expoliton, Corneli tibinamque tu solebas, meas essa liquid putare nugas. Iam ton causus es unus italorum. Omnae vont rebus explicare cartis. Doctis Jupiter et laboriosis. Qua rabet tibi quid hoc libelli, quale cumque quod patrona Virgo, plus uno maneat perenne saeclo.
The same lines at stage 5. The use of spoken tones combined with individual interpretation.
Cui dono lepidono o libellon, arida modo pumic expoliton, Corneli tibi namque tu solebas, meas essa liquid putare nugas. Iam ton causus es unus italorum. Omnae vont rebus explicare cartis. Doctis Jupiter et laboriosis. Qua rabet tibi quid hoc libelli, quale cumque quod patrona Virgo, plus uno maneat perenne saeclo.
Catullus 101, read at stage 5. This is an example of the elegiac couplet.
Multas per gentes, et multa per aequora vectus, adveneas miseras frater ad inferias, ut te postremo donarem munere mortis, et mutan equi alla querer cinere. Quando quid fortuna mihi te tapstulet ipsum, eo miser indigne frater ad emptem mihi. Nunc tamen interi haec prisco quae more parentum, tradita sunt tristi munera ad inferias. Accipe fraterno multum manante afflitu, at quin perpetuum frater aveatque vale.
Horace, the Odes, Book 2, Number 10, read at Stage 5. This is an example of the Sapphic strophe.
Rictius vives licini, nec valton semper urgendo, neque dum procellas cautus horriscis, nimium premendo litus iniquum. Aurean quisquis mediocritate diligit, tutus caret obsoleti sordibus dicti, caret invidenda sobrius aula. Saepius ventis agitator ingens pinus, et celsae graviore cassu decidunt turres, feriunque summos fulgura montis. Sperat in festis, metuit secundis, alteran sorte, bene praeparatum pectus. Informis iemes reducit Jupiter, ide summovet. Non si male nunc et olle si querit, quondam citara tacente suscitat musa, neque semper arco tendit Apollo. Rebus angustis animosus atque fortis appare, sapienter ide contra his vento nimium secundo turgida villa.
Horace, the Odes, Book 2, Number 14, read at Stage 5. This is an example of the Alcaic strophe.
Eo fugaces, postume, labuntur anni, nec pietas moran rugis et instanti senectae adferet, indomitaeque morti. Non si trecenis quodque teunt dies, amice places in lacrimabile Plutona Tauris, qui ter amplum Geryonen titionque tristi compescit unda scilicet omnibus, qui cumque terrae munere vescemur, e naviganda sive regis, si vinopes ermus coloni. Frustra cruentum Marte Caribimus, fractisque rauci fluctibus hadriae, frustra per autumnus nocente corporibus metuemus austrum. Visendus ater flumine languido cocytos errans, et Danae genus infame damnatusque longi Sisyphus Aeolides laboris. Linquendat ellus et domus et placins uxor, nequarum quas colis arborum te praeter in visas cupressus, ulla brevin dominum sequitur. Absumet heris, caecub ad ignior, servata centum clavibus, et mero tinget pavimentum superbo, pontificum poteore cinis.